from Buffalo Toronto Public Media and WBFO, this is What's Next Producers Picks, highlights of conversations heard on previous episodes. On today's show...
I come from the east side, the side of the city that gave me hope. Mm. I think anywhere where there's humans, like we have flaws, you know? We have experiences that have shaped our perceptions and perspectives, and through that, we're just trying to live.
Buffalo Poet Laureate Itina Fareed Cook. And we close with...
I feel like Champion Made, the Empowerment Summit, is a ministry, and I just want to be authentic and down to earth. Like, I go through things like everyone else, and I just want to show you how I navigate them.
Morgan Williams Bryant, CEO of Leadership Buffalo and founder and CEO of MWB Ignites. I'm Thomas O'Neill White. First, we revisit Holly Kirkpatrick's conversation with Buffalo Poet Laureate Itina Fareed Cook. The two discuss her role as Poet Laureate, her vision, and the importance of service in the community.
So, Itina, you're just the second person in this position. How do you hope to put your stamp on it?
You know what? Like with anything that I do, my mission is to ignite thought and expand perspectives. And so in this capacity, I'm going to utilize literary arts in order to do that. And I really hope to also really just put a stamp on the fact that there's so much power in the creative arts. It's like all of who I am. And so I really want to leave that stamp within the city of Buffalo, that there's power in the creative arts no matter where you come from.
So this is a question in a similar vein, but I think it's slightly different. So that's what stamp you want to put on it. Is there anything in particular you'd like to achieve? Any kind of event that you want to perform at? Anything that you want to leave legacy-wise?
You know what? Like,
you've only just started, and I'm asking you what your legacy
know,
to be.
I know.
It's a lot of pressure.
And to be honest, that is what it is. You know, ignite thought and expand perspectives. That's what my mission is overall in life. And so I'll utilize these skills to do that. I'd say I just want to make sure that whenever I'm speaking from my heart, from my experiences, and I'm being careful to find a way to position it so at least the majority of people can understand what is being said as it relates to whatever the city is going through or whatever's on the timeline or whatever the case is. There's not really a particular event, if you will. Oh, you know what? Actually, I'd love to speak within the space of foster care. Mm. And I think someone should speak and elevate that space to just showcase to the next generation or even those who are foster alumni who have gone through the system but who have pushed past those statistics and were able to make something of themselves, but they don't always see someone in certain capacities. I'd love to use my words, use my gifts, skills, talents, or what have you to showcase, like, here's what you can do and speak to that demographic as well.
So what was the process like in becoming the Poet Laureate? How did you find out?
I think overall, anytime you are placed in a position, I think there's a lot of vetting before they reach out or what have you. And I'm pretty sure there was a lot of research, which I don't know if you have to do a lot. You know, I've been in a lot of spaces. I've seen the mayor in particular in many spaces where I've spoke. And I'd say that perhaps that was the initiation of let's reach out and find out if there's interest. And then once I went through that process and expressing my interest, we went through a process of showcasing my credentials and going through the process of what do I foresee with this space and this role, and how do I look to kind of make it your own.
We should mention, I've already said, but it is an unpaid position. There will still be some people out there, though, who think, a city ordained poet? Really? Do we really need that? What would your response be to that kind of attitude?
I mean, of course. Of course you need something that will uplift the community in a creative way. There's something about the creative writing process and the creatives in general. Art is a language, and every medium is a different dialect. And I truly believe that within the art space, there's this ability to touch a wide range of individuals because you can utilize whether it's visual arts, theater, you know, whether it's digital media, whether it's literature or what have you, it has the potential to touch something within the emotions. It's emotive. And so because of that, a lot of times in these circumstances where there's things happening in the city and there's events and things like that, poetry has the power to open up the ears to get them ready for something, whatever that may be, whatever the instance is, the event or whatever is happening. I feel like it opens up our ears, no matter where we're from, no matter what the backgrounds are. That is important. You know, I think that can be impactful and powerful.
I know that it's something that's been impactful and powerful in your life.
Yes.
Can you just explain a little bit about how you came to be so creative? You're a musician, you're an artist, you're a videographer. Yeah. What led to that for you?
I think pain became potential for me coming up in the foster care system, losing my mother, my beautiful, creative, intelligent mother who had voids, just like sometimes we do as humans, losing her to substance abuse and to be in a foster home that I had this woman, my foster mother at that time, who knew that because of the odds that were against us and because of the labels like failure to thrive, I was diagnosed as emotionally handicapped. She knew I'm going to have to get these children involved in the community in some capacity. And what I was drawn to was creatives, you know, creatives, creative arts. Started off at church, just singing in the choir, memorizing scriptures and things like that, and doing Easter plays. And it went from there to be infused with that and then going to performing arts, being a graduate there. And being told I would be a failure to thrive and emotionally handicapped, there's this sense of you don't have a voice, where the creative arts allowed me to have a voice. It's just a different way. You know, I get to be free within poetry. I get to be free within photography or what have you. So yeah, I'd say it's pretty extensive. You know, I started very young, which is why I feel like the arts are important.
Yeah, and you're very open. I mean, we're talking right now about those tumultuous kind of early years, if you like. And you seem to be really willing to put this part of yourself out there. And it must be a part that's quite hard to talk about at times. So why is it so important for you to share those experiences or that part of you?
Because it's who I am. You know, how can you get a full sense of someone? And I'm not saying this is something that's easy. Mm-hmm. I think that as human beings, and this is what I teach to young people, the things we go through become our gold. You know, I grew up being told that the East Side is this and that, and there was a lot of negativity, but I lived there. How do you tell a child that where they live and where they grow and develop are these negative instances or what have you? And I see it in a different perspective. So it's important for me to say I'm from the East Side. It's important for me to say I'm a foster care. It's important for me to say that, you know, these different things that I come from, so that those that may feel as though they're not worthy or they don't have value because they come from the same space, their ears can be opened, their hearts can be opened to say, you know what, maybe I can. Controlling and taking ownership of your story and not being afraid, I think, created this freedom in me that I'm resilient, you know? I'm an open book, you know what I mean? And there's a level of confidence that I carry. People are attracted to that. And when they're attracted, I want to give. What else can I give you? Hope, truth.
Everything that you're saying is really positive and it's wonderful to hear. Mm-hmm. At the same time, do you still kind of brush against that notion that the East Side is a place where some people might not be so proud to come from? You seem to kind of brush against that. There's a friction there. You're talking about that resilience. Like, why should I be afraid to say that that's where I'm from?
Right. I mean, why should I? I come from the East Side, the side of the city that gave me hope. Mm. I think anywhere there's humans, like, we have flaws. You know, we have experiences that have shaped our perceptions and perspectives. And through that, we're just trying to live, you know, we're trying to live the best that we can with flaws and all. Yes, there's flaws on the east side, but there's also flaws on the south side, mm-hmm. and the west side, and mm-hmm. the north side, and anywhere else you go. You know why? Because we're human beings trying the best that we can. And so, yeah, I brush against that notion. I said it in my songs, you know, talk about how people drive fast past the east side because they're afraid. But I think with the fear and that discomfort becomes this, almost this comfortability with discomfort, unfortunately. And they push past and you never get to experience. And so that's what I'm trying to do. Like, I want people to experience the fact that me, very intentional, very driven, very resilient, very confident, very educated. I come from the east side. It's tough, maybe sometimes violent, but I also come from places where neighbors looked out for each other. You know, I come from a place where when I walked outside, there was Miss Sarah down the street, Miss Jones, that always said hello. If I was doing something wrong, they would come and check on me and tell my mom. That was community for me. So you can't just focus on the negative. So much positive, too.
This is a great reason to flip to talk about the fact that you are a musician. Mm-hmm. You use the name AI, The Anomaly. You have, in my opinion, probably your catchiest tune. It's called East Side. It's, to me, it's a huge celebration of the East Side and the fact that you're mm-hmm. from there as well. Do you like performing that song? It seems to go down well when you do it live.
Oh my goodness, yes. I perform all over, but I think one of the most interesting situations was when I was on stage in California, all the mm-hmm. way in the West. I said, who that little lady from the... Everyone said, East Side. So it was just, it's interesting. Like, I feel like it's a confidence to say, you know, and to uplift that. And like I said, I want people who come from that space to feel like, yeah, flaws and all, whatever the case is, this is where I come from, you know?
And let's get into a little bit about your process. So here again, I'm mm-hmm. my experience of you is in your life as a musician. So mm-hmm. I'm speaking with that, but feel free to go in whatever direction. And I know from interviewing before that when you are working on your lyrics in the studio that I've been to, you welcomed me there. You work in what seemed to me a very zen way.
Yeah.
It was dark. There was a darkened booth. Mm-hmm. There was a curtain mm-hmm. there so no one can see you as you're flowing. Can you explain your process a little bit to those who aren't so familiar?
So writing to me is my remedy. Mm-hmm. It's my medicine. It's a very sacred place. It started off as that, you know, I was given a pen. A counselor said, write down your emotions. And I fell into that sanctitude, if you will. And so I carried that throughout and I always wanted to protect it. But yes, like entering into that space, it's magnificent when you're able to cultivate and create a sense to where you can feel free and safe. And the studio that we were at is Carolina Blue. That's my audio engineer. Mm-hmm. He has been able to create that space and that vibe for me. And we work really well together. And he understands where I'm coming from when it comes to that. But yeah, I then take a moment to think about all that is happening around me. And I get to utilize words and shape lyrics with the hope to share it so everyone else can feel something, ignite thought, expand perspectives. So yeah, I definitely love music, but rap is rhythm and poetry. You know, I started off as a writer. I went into poetry. I did a lot when it came to that. I love the art of writing. I love the journey it takes you on, how you can nestle words in a way, how you can, you know, piece together things to say in so many different ways. You know how they say a picture is worth 1,000 words? Mm-hmm. So many words you could put together to formulate pictures, you know. And it's the most safest place and the most comfortable place for me. I feel like my first language is poetry.
I know that your predecessor, Gillian Haynsworth, she called the role of poet laureate a service. Would you agree?
I absolutely call it a service as well. I think that sometimes, you know, it's placed in this category where they say it's unpaid, it's volunteership and things like that. But yes, it's service, serving through the creative arts.
And I know from talking to you before, and I know from following you on social media, listening to your lyrics and your songs, mm-hmm. that your faith, you're a Christian, your faith is obviously a huge part of your life. Mm-hmm. How does it manifest itself, not only in your life, but also in your work?
You know, my faith is based on a foundation of loving your neighbor as yourself, seeking first to understand and to be understood, actively listening, being slow to anger, slow to speak. And so it's love, agape. It's unconditional. Regardless of where you come from, what your background is, or what it is that you choose, I can love with action. And so that's the framework, that's the foundation of who I am, you know, within my faith. And I think that, if I might say so myself, and I hope that this is very clear to other people, that manifests through what I say and what I do. I'm not perfect. I may have flaws. I do have flaws. But one thing for sure, I'm striving towards perfection, and that is a lifetime striving and journey. And I hope that showcases in everything that I do. You know, I just want to serve through love, you know.
Another thing that I see as being part of your life and your work is your family.
Oh, yeah.
Again, very present on social media. Your kids are in your music videos sometimes. Is that a conscious choice to involve them in this life, this creative world?
Of course it is. Of course it is. My two little beautiful creative beings, Isaac and Ilena, and then my husband, 13 years, Joshua Cook. My family is my foundation. And I think it's the key to a lot of things within life. And so I think it's very important to me to showcase, coming from my background and being feeling this displacement, not really having my blood relatives as much as I would wanted to. It gave me a sense of wanting and longing for family. So, man, my family is my backbone. They're the ones that I go home to when I get to be 100%, you know, Idina. And so, yeah, it's very intentional to have them part of everything that I do.
And having their mom be a poet laureate, that's a really official title, right?
Everybody's excited.
And we've been speaking a lot about self-expression with mm-hmm. this. And in your role as poet laureate, what if the powers that be don't like what you have to express? You know, would that play a part in what you create or decide? It might curtail what you decide to express if you're worrying how it might be received?
That's such a great question. I think that as an artist, well, first and foremost, as a human being within the society that has created freedom of speech, mm-hmm. And to be able to have the freedom within my artistry to present it as I see fit, I think that has been respected, you know, by those who have made the choice to place me in this position. I think that there are going to be times where, you know, I may say something that doesn't sit right with people, and I understand that, and that's their right to have their opinions and perceptions or what have you. But I think that's the point. I think sometimes, you know, maybe I may say some things that are uncomfortable, but I have experiences and to know that uncomfortability drives us towards some type of change. That's what I hope. There may be people that may not like what I say due to just not understanding or, like I said, perception or perspective, but I'm okay with that. And I think I'm the type of person, I'd love to have an open discussion, because then I can seek first to understand than to be understood. The skill of writing, before I put anything out, I want to be thoughtful. My first position is, am I saying something that's going to help? How do you position what you're going to say so that it helps, not harms? Now, sometimes there's things that need to be said that feels like it hurts. Like, wait, what happened? What's going on? But having that open discussion. Now, I would say yes. There have been many times where people were not happy with what I said. This is where I would segue with, like, an education, mm-hmm. you know, working with students. And I say, hey, I need you to sit down right now, you know, having classroom management and things like that, or you are creating conflict within this classroom. And of course, they don't like what I'm saying, but it's all about how do I help you realize the purpose of what I'm saying? Let's step back and actively listen. You have to have restraint within yourself to really seek, what are you saying? Is it purposeful? And if you don't agree, that's okay.
That was Buffalo's Poet Laureate, Itina Fareed Cook. We close today's show with a special conversation with Morgan Williams Bryant. She sits with Jay Moran to discuss how she puts faith over fear in her walk through life, and also discusses her Champion Made Empowerment Summit that is taking place this Saturday.
Welcome to What's Next. Our guest this morning is Morgan Williams Bryant. Morgan is the CEO of Leadership Buffalo and also MWB Ignites, and the MWB Ignites Champion Made Empowerment Summit. It's coming up this Saturday. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you all.
It's a pleasure to have you with us, and there's a lot to talk about here. It's interesting, this summit, something that you were telling me before we went on the air, you started off with kind of, I would not say humble goals, but I mean, a goal of like, hey, if I can attract 50 people to something like this, I'm doing something.
Right.
But it's grown far, far beyond that.
It has. And so my company, MWB Ignites, I launched in 2011, and I focus on leadership development, where I go into organizations to provide training and strategic planning, project management for companies. But I also have an arm of empowerment as well, where I work with women and empower them to really be the best selves that God has ordained them to be. And so the Champion Made Empowerment Summit was born in 2018 after a fast that I did. My church every year, Elam Christian Fellowship, we do a Daniel fast in January, and it's really surrendering and kind of pausing and giving up something, sacrificing something, so that you can really focus for the year, set your goals for the year, but set your goals based off of where God is guiding you, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So after reading, doing a Daniel fast with my own sister circle, my friend circle, and we decided to also implement reading the book by the late Dr. Celeste Owens, which is called the 40-Day Surrender Fast. And I really got serious about it because there were some goals that I had in my life that I wanted to accomplish that year. And after finishing the fast, every goal or prayer that I had asked God for, I saw it come to fruition. And I was so amped up. I'm like, oh my goodness, if other people really just step back and surrender, focus spiritually on themselves and listen to what God has to say for them, you know, He really will give them the desires of their heart, as the scripture says. So I said, I called my prayer partner and my sorority sister. I said, you know, I really want to do like a little small mini summit. And I just want to tell people my testimony and share with them. A lot of times we look at people that are in successful positions, air quotes, depending on what success is to you. And you look at them and you say, like Michelle Obama, like in my head, she's my best friend. But you look at a Michelle Obama and you say, wow, you know, how did she get to where she is? Or I wish I can do some of the things that she can. But
it's interesting. I like that in your head, she's your best friend.
Yes.
What is it about her? I mean, I have my own personal thoughts about her.
It's her authenticity.
Okay.
Number one, it's her being able to be relational to people.
Sure.
It's really just the presence that she brings. It's inspirational. I've heard her speak several times with one of my girlfriends. And every time you literally step in an arena, she hasn't come out on stage yet. You feel the inspiration, the empowerment that she has. So it really starts with the authenticity that she has and the presence that she brings.
Do you think that's authenticity? That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the other elements of this, you know, behind the summit. That authenticity, is that something that is one of the things that maybe when people find their way through the summit and find that maybe they're lacking a little bit?
I can't say authenticity, but it's really about choosing faith over fear.
Okay.
I think what happens is we have desires of our heart, which the Bible clearly lays out. Like God will give you the desires of your heart, but fear impede your ability to be able to move forward. What are people going to say? Do I have the tools to really be able to move forward? Do I have the support system? Are people going to talk about me? Do people think I'm crazy? Who's going to come hear it? You know, when I thought about launching this, I'm like, oh my goodness, can I at least get 50 women? And my prayer partner said, are you crazy? Like you can name, you get 50 women like that. You're going to get a lot more. And I was like, I don't know if I can, you know, literally just get women and, you know, 50. And
sure.
I focused on women because, you know, I'm a woman. And I'm like, you know, if I could really just help us grab on to really living a life more abundantly. You know, right. A lot of times we pray small prayers. You know, Lord, let me just be able to get by. Lord, let me be able to just pay my water bill. If I could just get a new car. But really, the scripture says that he wants us to live life and he wants us to live it more abundantly. So we're really not praying big enough and our visions for ourselves is not big enough. But that's when your relationship with God comes in. So that's what I think it is. It's not necessarily authenticity that people lack.
Okay.
It's fear. It's faith. And it's really being able to choose faith over fear. And it's not that fear doesn't exist, because anytime I have to talk in front of somebody, I'm nervous.
You don't look nervous at all.
Very, especially when I have to get up in front of hundreds of people or just even two people.
Right.
But it's really saying I'm going to do it scared. I am. You know, I am nervous. I don't know if this is going to work out. I don't know who's going to come hear me, but I feel this burning desire and I know this is the road that God has laid out for me. And I'm more afraid of God than I am of anybody else. So I'm going to do it scared. And every time I've stepped out on faith, he's answered a call.
And you talked about abundance, and that's interesting because, you know, I think when we're thinking spiritual abundance, and then there's also material abundance or well, maybe professional abundance or whatever. So, I mean, is that what you do? I mean, do people find all those possibilities in this?
It's a great question. And I feel like it's both.
Okay.
Because we're here. We're on earth. You know, for me, my faith is my foundation. And that's really my roadmap. People believe different things and they have different religions as well. And I don't push minds on anyone else, but this is what I believe. So anyone that's a part of the Champion Made movement, you're well aware of what it is, what it's about,
and moving forward.
You know what you're getting, what you're getting into, and you know what the foundation is, and you can choose, yes, this is something that I would like to be a part of or not, because I believe something different. Or it's just the message in general that you're embracing. But physical, I say definitely tangible things, whether it's a house.
Sure.
You know, some people want to become homeowners. Some people want to go back to school and get degrees. Some may want to launch a business. It could just be, I want to stop being shy, you know? So it's spiritual abundance, but also the tangible things that you want. He said he'll give you the desires of your heart. So if your goal is to buy a 3-bedroom house or a 5-bedroom house or a 10, as long as it aligns with the vision that he has for you, you can achieve those things. There's not a problem with you wanting things, and you just can't put that above God. And then also spiritually, you want to be sound, because when you pray for big blessings and you pray for things, there are things that also come. You have to be able to handle what comes along with that. So, yeah.
Your faith, obviously, it's what drives you. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Can you explore how it came to be? I mean, you know, because I know a lot of people of faith that, you know, they've come to it in different ways. Some of it's just something that they had since they were young. And,
yes. I'm going to answer that. I want to go back to authenticity for a minute. A lot of times with also authenticity, some people do suppress it because they're afraid of what people will say or how it will look. So I do think as leaders, especially in a community, you do need to show vulnerability, which really opens up the authenticity for yourself.
Okay.
A lot of times you don't want to really let somebody know, which everybody shouldn't know. You know, everything about you. But people need to know the real you in real life, because life happens. And people need to know how you navigated that, because that will open up a door for somebody else to know how they can navigate it and overcome or either move forward, whether it's good or bad.
Okay.
As far as my faith is my foundation, my family has always been in a church. I was brought up in a church, raised in a church. But for my own walk, I tell this story. So I wrote a book called The Champion's Prayer Journey. Mm-hmm. 25 days. And so my life with prayer, my relationship with prayer came when I was probably about 10 or 11 years old. I prayed for $10.
Okay.
And I don't remember why I wanted this $10, Jay, but I don't know. 10 or 11 years old, $10 is a lot of money years ago. But I wanted $10, and my family was in town from Troy, New York, right near Albany,
sure.
As my great aunt and my great uncle. And they were getting ready to leave on a Sunday. So they were coming by. We had had brunch and breakfast, and they were coming to say their goodbyes. And my Uncle Buster gave me $5.
Mm.
And then my Aunt Jean said, "Oh, baby, I love you. It's so good to see you," and hugged my mom and me. And then she gave me
$5. Oh.
And so when I looked at it, I said, "Oh, my God, this is the $10 that I prayed for." And at that moment, it's money. But at that moment, I realized that God hears me. And if I pray to him, he will answer me, no matter if it's I just want $10 or I need a closer relationship with you. I want to do better in school. I want to be better on my job. You know, there's some things that I want to pay off. Whatever your goal is in life, if you pray, scripture says that prayers are like a perfume to him. It's a fragrance. And so when you pray, it opens up that communication line. And sometimes people think prayer is so deep. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to have the right words and know all the scriptures. But sometimes, literally, when I don't know what to do, I had one this week where I was like, Lord, I don't know. Just help me. You know, it could be as simple as that,
right,
or other things. So that's when my relationship was more solidified, because I understood that God is real. It's not just what my father, who is a minister, is telling me, or my grandmother. My mother, you know, took my sister and I to church every Sunday. We went to Sunday school. We learned. We prayed. You know, she had us in church. We were very involved in the church as we began to get older, enjoying different ministries for ourselves. My father's church as well. All of my aunts and uncles, but I knew it for myself. And so then no one else can tell me differently, because I realized that I prayed and he answered me. So that really is what catapulted my personal relationship with God. And God rest my Uncle Buster and Aunt Jean's soul. They have passed on, but I tell that story all the time.
Your father is a minister. Did you ever consider following that path?
No.
No, not at all?
No.
Okay.
I have been asked that, but no. I think that's getting in the pulpit. That's a different level.
Yeah, right. Oh, there's
you
no
know,
doubt.
And I don't, everyone can be a minister.
Right.
It's really your own personal walk and relationship and how people see you on a daily basis. But I do not have a desire to have my own church or preach every Sunday.
Sure.
I feel like Champion Made, the Empowerment Summit, is a ministry. And I just want to be authentic and down to earth. Like, I go through things like everyone else. And I just want to show you how I navigate them. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't work for you, eat the meat, spit out the bone.
How about navigating then your professional career then? And you've followed it. I don't know if you set out with this goal to be where you are right now, or how it came to pass. I mean, how did things develop for you professionally?
Professionally, so I went to undergrad at Buffalo State College, and my master's was at Medai University in organizational leadership. At first at Buff State, I wanted to work because when I was in church, Calvary Baptist Church, I was involved in the audio video ministry where I did the cameras, you know, the sound at church and all of those things. So I was very interested in that. And so I went to Performing Arts High School for communications, radio, television, it was called at the time. And then I went on to Buff State for broadcast communications. So I always thought for a couple of years that I wanted to be in radio, television, broadcasting, but behind the scenes. People say, you're going to be on camera? No, I wanted to be behind the scenes, calling the shots.
Right. You know? Yeah, well,
I need audience reaction on camera five, those things. And then as I started to go through my college journey, I knew that I also wanted to work with people. I've always been a people person. I've always loved leadership, and I've always been a leader, but I've also been very shy.
Another thing that's hard to believe. I tell you, I am.
And so working through my church ministry, I knew I wanted to work with women or children or both in programs. And as I started my career, that's the trajectory that I started on. And I took almost a year off after grad school because I was trying to find the right program that I really wanted to focus on. My mom said, you know, you can pause and actually make a sound decision versus thinking you just have to jump right into graduate school to get it done. So I'm really grateful that she said that to me because it gave me an opportunity to really do good research on programs. And then Medai's organizational leadership program really drew me in. Mm. And so I knew I wanted to be in a leadership role. I wanted to work with people and help them develop their leadership skills, which is something that's always come natural for me. And so I started off at the Community Action Organization.
Okay.
After I got my master's, I did work in television for probably a year.
Yeah, were you calling the shots?
2 years. I worked at the Christian television station in Orchard Park,
oh,
TCT.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, so I was the prayer partner coordinator and a production assistant. So I got my feel in there. And after I got my master's, I worked at the Community Action Organization of Western New York. And I was a program manager. And my career just took off from there. So
And you just saw the broadcasting bug was gone.
Yeah, and you know, always you use communications.
Oh, no
you
doubt.
Have to be a good communicator. And so I've always been able to use that as a foundation. And I just continued on with program management and leadership. And I got promoted a few times there and then went on to be deputy commissioner for youth services for Erie County, where I worked at. My office was at the detention center. So I worked with juvenile pens, delinquents, runaways. But I also had the youth borough where we would provide funding to nonprofit organizations who were running after school programs, which I had that experience doing. And from there, I went to Girl Scouts of Western New York. I worked in government. It was probably the shortest stint. So a little part of me feels like I have like boomer tendencies because I like stability. So I was at CAO for 6 years and then I felt like it was time for me to move on and I could have upward mobility with my career. So that's when I applied for the job, deputy commissioner. And actually someone had asked me to apply for it, a mentor of mine. And so I was like, I'm not really sure. And he said, think about it. And I said, I'm not really sure. Let me think about it. But I went on there and I only stayed there for about maybe 14 to 15 months. Mm-hmm. And I was torn when I got the opportunity at Girl Scouts to apply because I was like, I don't know. I was at CAO for 6 years and I feel like I should be here longer. But I talked to my dad about it and I said, but I know nonprofit is where I like to be.
Right.
And that was government. And I knew that I could have even a larger impact going back to nonprofit. So I knew when I finished working for the county that eventually I would transition back to nonprofit. And it just so happened that that position and opportunity opened up that a former supervisor had sent me. And she's like, Morgan, this job has your name on it. And I'm like, ah, it really does. And I'm like, but I don't know if I should leave. I've only been here for a short amount of time. So I had that tug of war internally. And my dad said to me as I was talking to him, he said, sometimes you have to jump when the fire's hot. Opportunities don't always come around. So I prayed over it over the weekend and ended up putting my resume in. And from the time someone told me about the job to the time I got hired, it was probably 5 days.
Oh, wow.
It was like so quick. And I was at Girl Scouts of Western New York for 10 years.
Okay.
Right. I started off as the senior vice president of program and membership. And then I was promoted to the chief impact officer. And with Girl Scouts, I oversaw 9 counties.
Oh,
came
wow.
from the Erie County. It was upward to 15 to 20,000 girls at one time to about 7,000 volunteers, where I oversaw 3 different departments. And then this opportunity with Leadership Buffalo opened up. And ironically, with Leadership Buffalo, when I got out of grad school, of course, I'm researching all the leadership programs. And I said, wow, it would be really cool to lead that organization one day. Because, of course, you type in leadership,
right.
on Google,
right.
Leadership Buffalo comes up. And I went on about my business. I, you know, got the job at CAO and continued to move up. And then I went through the Leadership Buffalo program in 2017 when I completed it. In 2018, they asked me to be on a board. So I was on the board from 2018 until 2023, up until just the end of last year. And when the opportunity opened up, I was on the board of directors. And so, you know, a couple of people had sent me the job, like, you're on the board, like, this position is perfect for you. And I'm like, no, you know, I'm going to help usher in the new CEO and, you know, continue to support in that way. I don't know if I should apply. And then a good girlfriend of mine sat me down and said, this is a perfect opportunity. And didn't you say years ago that this would be cool to lead the organization? And I said, yeah, but I don't know. And so she was like, you are the one who founded the Champion Made Empowerment Summit. So walk me through why you are not applying for this. Like,
they were holding your
are a champion builder, but yet she was like, no, we're going to have this conversation. So at the last minute, I said, well, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring and see. And if it's for me, it will be for me. And if it's not, that's okay too.
Sure.
I'll still work. And here I am from saying, wow, it would be really cool to lead that organization today. And I'm sitting here as not just CEO of MWB Ignites, but of Leadership Buffalo as well.
Our guest this morning on What's Next is Morgan Williams Bryant. Morgan is the CEO of Leadership Buffalo. She was just mentioning it. And also our MWB Ignites Champion Made Empowerment Summit is coming up this Saturday. We're going to get into that just a little bit. But I'm intrigued by your career path.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the time, what really caught me, your time working with youth at the detention center.
Mm-hmm.
What lessons did you take forth from that? Because I can only imagine what kind of an experience that must have been.
Yeah, I've had good experiences in every position that I had. I'll say that. But I've also learned a lot.
Right.
So secretly, Jay, I would like to be like an FBI agent in my next career. Like, I, so if anybody's listening, that is like, I love
give me
watching.
A couple years of leadership.
Yeah, give me some time. When I retire, you know,
because okay.
I do love my job. That's, you know, if you need me to work on okay. the intelligence side. So I love all crime shows and things like that. So going into it, I'm like, oh, wow, I can marry program, youth development, but also, you know, working with youth who have committed or allegedly committed crimes
right.
because the detention center is a holding center. And a lot of people would say to me as I'm walking throughout the community, like, oh, my goodness, your office is there. Mm-hmm. It's at the detention center. And I say, yeah, yeah, it is. And so the perception that people have is that these bad kids and you should be afraid working with them. But what I found is they just lack structure.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have many issues with the kids at all. Now, were there fights and things like that? Of course, you know, and some of them committed some really serious crimes. But what I found is if you love them and you support them and you give them the right structure, that they will thrive. And that's what I found that they were really lacking. And so it's really inputting program to help rebuild them in that way, to provide those opportunities to them. So they weren't bad kids. They made some really bad decisions. Now, there, you know, there was a couple where I was like, I'm not really sure here. But really, it was just it was providing them other opportunities. And then people would ask me, like, what do I think was the major problem or why this is happening so much now? And I said, you know, I really do think it's the breakdown of the family structure. Things are just different than it was many, many years ago, even from when I was brought up, which I personally don't think I'm that old.
You're not
my
that
little
old.
Sister make comments sometimes. But it's really the breakdown of the family structure. You had community when I was growing up, community probably when you were growing up, but it's a lot different now.
Sure.
Whereas some of that community is still there, but some of it is left. Like, I was afraid to do anything wrong. Because my mother's friends were going to know, the neighbor was going to know, and they were all going to tell on me, where there's a difference now. And so I feel like if we bring back community structure, the family structure, no matter what that looks like, because I know it's different now
right.
for this generation, that would help really rebuild and stop some of the activity that's going on that you see today with youth. So I really had a good time working there. There was a lot of work that I had to do in a short amount of time there with rebuilding the structure. But it was an interesting experience, but also very fruitful.
You somewhat answered my next question in saying that about, you know, family structure mm-hmm. and community. And most certainly, I think a lot of people would echo those sentiments. But you also mentioned how when you could give or show some opportunities and some structure to these young individuals, that was very beneficial. Are there enough opportunities? I mean, is that something that we really should maybe be focusing on? Because, you know, community is only going to come when mm-hmm. it comes and when it arrives.
Mm-hmm.
We have youth that are in trouble right now. You know, what can we offer them right now to perhaps, you know, take them on a different path?
You can always have more programming, but really it's access.
Okay.
And helping people understand. There are so many programs out there for families,
right.
for children, for elderly. Like, there are so many great organizations, especially through Leadership Buffalo, that we're able to see that's doing great things. Do people have the access to them, and are they aware, truly? You know, and do people... do they have the motivation to take advantage of the services? And I hear, oh, we need more program. And I'm like, there's a lot of program out
gotcha.
There. Like, I've been involved for years
right.
in a community with this program. It's, are you willing to pause and take time and investing yourself, investing your family, and say, you know what, I need help. It's being vulnerable, as I said before. You know what, I do need help. I don't know it all. And allowing people to help you. I find that this generation is like, this is my child and my child only. My mom was the type where I don't know everything, so I'm opening up for other people to be a part of your sister's lives so that they can teach you what I don't know. But these days, you really can't say much to other people's children because their parents get upset.
Right.
So it's access. It's them being open and flexible. Like, yes, I do want to be involved. And then the consistency. You can't just be in a program if you realize that you do need help. You can't say, okay, I'm going to go one time or two times or a week or a month and that's it. It's consistency. The mentors that I had when I was in high school are still my mentors to this day. And I still reach out to them.
Really?
Some of those same lessons that they've taught me when I was 11, 12, 16 years old are some of those same lessons that I make the decisions that I need to make as a CEO in both companies. Like, it's people first, it's being kind and learning those lessons, but people have to be open to it.
Certainly.
Yeah.
I know you have an answer for this, but so I want to ask this question. What makes a good leader?
One, integrity. You have to do what's right even when no one's looking.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it can't be about you. I feel like leadership is 75% people and then it's 25% the technical and all of those things. Being vulnerable and authentic. A lot of times as leaders, you feel like you have to know everything. I'm guilty of it. You know, you want to make sure that you're leading and that you are educated enough to be able to lead your team. But being a leader is also being vulnerable and saying, I don't have every skill that I need to make this organization successful, but I have the vision and I'm smart enough, intelligent to know that I can build a team around me and together we can carry it forward. So it's being vulnerable enough to admit, like, I don't know this. Do you know this, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a weak area for me or a gap area for me, but I see that it's a strength for you. So it's integrity. It's being vulnerable. And being vulnerable, you be more authentic, which helps you really be able to build the trust and the foundation on your team where they're like, you know what? She's human. Morgan's human. Jay's human. And so now I know that I can really trust them. And it's really being kind and being in tune to the people that's working with you. I find if you are really focused on the people, the team that you're working with, that you really care about them, no matter how much you're paying them, how many hours, they will go extra mile for you because they know that you're there to support them and really care for them. I can sit here and give you for an hour, you know, what I feel about leadership, but trust, authenticity, communication is key. Really being transparent and open. You know, this is what's going on in the organization. This is why we can move forward or why we can't, or that's a great idea. Let's put that on the parking lot for now and look at how we can build out a plan for that. And it's really being open and bringing people in as well and knowing that you can't do it yourself.
You've done work, you go into organizations and you bring your expertise. Do you see that some of those elements lacking though? The one that seems to stand out that you mentioned, the idea that it's not your job as a leader to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yet maybe some leaders either are insecure about that fact or want to be involved in everything. I guess I'm just asking your general, what you've seen in some of these organizations.
I think it's both. Yes, I've seen most times top management don't realize they see everything going on for those that work with them, like, you know, middle management, maybe your first tier management. I'm always very careful about the way I say that.
It starts
at the top. And it's like, I see that there needs to be more work done there first before it can trickle down to the entire organization.
Interesting.
I think leaders, those that are leading or in those positions to lead the organization, need to be more aware of how they're connecting with their team. Are you investing in your team? Yes, we have 9 goals that we need to hit by December. And when you think 9 goals over 12 months, oh, we got that. But people are, you know, they have family. You say leave work at the door, you can't.
Right. No.
You can't. You know, if your baby's sick and you sent them to daycare or school, you know, you're worried about that, you really need to sometimes pause and just listen. And when you truly listen, then you know how to respond. So I find that more work has to be done at the top, and it's helping them be vulnerable. I keep going back to that.
No, I appreciate that.
And then once they understand their behaviors, I'm discertified. Which is a whole nother whole nother topic, but helping people understand themselves as individuals and how they communicate and work with people, then they can begin to pass that on with their other teams. So that's what I see the most.
You're hearing Morgan Williams Bryant on What's Next, talking about leadership. And as a matter of fact, this coming Saturday, she's leading the MWB Ignites Champion Made Empowerment Summit. So let's talk about just that, because I bet people who've heard your description of leadership are going to be very intrigued about what they might learn at this summit. So let's talk about some of the people that are going to be there, the speakers and such that are going to be there. Tell us more.
Right. So we started off talking about Champion Made that was mm-hmm. founded in 2018. And my goal was 50 people. Mm-hmm. We had probably over 100 that first time, and it's grown ever since. We're in our fifth year now. Of course, you got to minus a couple of years with COVID that we lost. And so it's grown from probably 100 people. Last year, we had 400 individuals that attended, men and women. So it's a primarily woman attended event, but men attend as well. And the goal is to help people choose faith over fear and move forward. I believe as long as we have breath in our body, we all have an assignment from God on this earth, whatever your assignment is. So maybe you get your ministry across by baking cakes and people love them, or, you know, you're in construction and you build, you're a carpenter or a plumber, or, you know, you decide to do an empowerment summit like me, or you're a CEO, or you may be a doctor in a hospital. Whatever your calling is, we all have an assignment, and we all can do ministry through that assignment. When I say do ministry, it's showing people kindness, helping them understand that the only reason that I am successful, one, is because God is my foundation. That's number one. Number two, I just decide to do things scared. Every year I have anxiety putting this together, and I have a great team that really helps me out with this, especially now being in a new position. I really needed to focus on Leadership Buffalo,
sure.
but the team really stepped up and helped because they knew. But we have a template, you know.
Right.
But really, it's not your average empowerment summit. It's really a movement where we are looking for God to give us the essential ingredients for us to get out of our own way. So he wants us to live life more abundantly. He wants us to choose faith over fear. He wants to bless us abundantly. And a lot of times, as I've said before, our fear impedes us to be able to move forward. So what I do is bring panelists in to talk about things that they've experienced. What was that champion moment for you? And I define champion as somebody who decides to defy the odds to find out how great they can be. A champion doesn't mean that you win every game.
Right.
You know, it means that, you know, you turn your losses into lessons and you can stay focused and get back on track. And then ultimately you win the ultimate game of life, but you may have some bruises along the way. And so I bring in panelists to talk about their journey to having that pivotal moment where it's like, you know what, whatever this fear, whatever this thing was, this barrier that stopped me from before, or that I found as I was on my journey, I was able to get past it by. And so they share their individual stories. This year, we have the Honorable Nicole Morris from Rochester, New York, who was the youngest judge in Rochester at the time. And at that time, of course, you're thinking, I'm just almost thinking was 30 years old.
Wow.
And how am I going to become a judge? Mm-hmm. You know, who's going to support me? Do they feel like I have the experience? Am I too young? No, if that's your assignment, you're not too young.
Right.
We have Brittany Rump, who started the Innova All-Girl Charter School in Rochester, New York. And it's like, I'm going to start a whole school? There are a lot of schools here in Rochester, New York. But how she chose to choose faith over fear and move forward. We have Brian Inman Sr., who had everything, you know, family, career, and then made a decision to try drugs. And, you know, lost everything at one point. But then how did he get back on track to have a successful trucking business? And our keynote speaker this year is Dr. Kevin James. He is the president of a historically Black college and university, Morris Brown College. And years ago, Morris Brown lost their accreditation.
Wow.
And by losing your accreditation, it's like, well, what students are going to stay here?
Right.
You know, with historically Black schools, they have a lot of pride around that, a lot of passion behind that for various reasons that we can also spend another hour
yeah.
talking
to bring
about.
Back for those
right.
hours, yeah.
But at that time, he wasn't the president, and he's looking at this institution just basically it's going to close.
Right.
And he felt a tugging at his spirit, like, I'm going to be the next president of Morris Brown College. Now, who in their right minds with a successful education career, you know, with your doctorate, and you're like, I'm going to go lead a school that lost their accreditation.
Right.
So he said he picked up the phone and called them and said, hi, I'm Dr. Kevin James, and I'm your next president.
Wow.
Who do I speak to apply? And his mentors and people that he looked at all told him this was career suicide. Why would you do that? And now Morris Brown has their accreditation back. He's rebuilding the school. And so basically, because he chose faith over fear and listened to all the voices saying, this is career suicide, don't do this. There's so many other schools you can be president of. Look at your accolades, you know. But he opened up a door for a historically Black college not to be closed and to lose that history. And I think he said when he took on that role, they had $700 in their bank account,
college. Oh, my goodness.
$700. And I don't even remember how many students, but we'll find out again this Saturday.
Right.
And now they're in the process of breaking ground on a multi-million-dollar hotel, which is going to be built on the college campus, which will fund their tourism program. So why did these people that I chose and, you know, how did I reach success? And success is different to different,
certainly,
you know, different people. And it's just because we decided to do it scared. So I'm very nervous about Saturday, very nervous about getting up yet again.
But you're going to do it.
I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it scared. And I trust God and I trust the journey that he has on me. And I'm very grateful. We have 26 sponsors this year. There are some that's been with me since the first year, which was also a fear at one point. Well, how am I going to pay for a conference? It costs money, but it's really having a good circle. I call it a champion circle around you that help push you, because you don't get through fear or doing it scared by yourself. You do have to have people to encourage you in those moments where it's like, I don't want to do this anymore. I've said it 1,000 times. Yeah, I don't do this. I just want to take a break. And so this year, the theme is about getting in position. And so a lot of times we feel like, I just need to do this one more thing before I can start. Well, I need to get this before I start. I need to lay the foundation. It's like, you just have to start. Just say yes. You can start and everything else will fall into place. There's a scripture that says faith without works is dead. So you have the faith, but you're not putting the work in. You're just sitting on it and you cannot. That's not how that works. That is not how that works. So you have to push forward. So for those that will be attending this year that have attended in the past, you're definitely going to be in for a treat with the three panelists and keynote that we have. And then we always have soloists that's there and some additional entertainment. But all of it is really to motivate you to be the best person that you can be.
Gotcha.
Yes.
And if people want to find out a little bit more, what's the best way to find out?
My website is mwbignites.com/events. So if you just go to mwbignites.com, click on events, and all of the information is there as well.
Very nice. Don't be too scared.
No.
You're going to do great. I'm sure you are.
Thank you, Jay.
And that will do it for Producers Picks. We thank our guests, Itina Farid-Cook and Morgan Williams Bryant. If you missed anything or want to hear it again, you can get this program as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts or on the Amplify BTPM app. Each episode is online at WBFO.org. I'm Thomas O'Neill White, and thanks for listening.